Hello, ramblers and gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing IG at Rambling and Gambling. And email me, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Doing a few interviews today. This, I think, is going to be really good. First, we're talking about how the NFL has gone absolutely crazy for wide receivers this offseason. Santana Moss joining us for that one. Former Washington great, was here in D.C. for a decade, All-Pro in 2005, the Cowboy Killer, also played 4 years with the Jets. Awesome dude, too. Really, really nice guy. Then the Washington Post's Neil Greenberg is back. We had him on to talk football last December. Today, though, we're talking Kentucky Derby, which is Saturday, and we are going to play a game called Derby Winner or Professional Wrestler. And finally, I asked a guy by the name of Fred Siegel to come on. He started the Twitter handle Freezing Cold Takes, in which he pretty much trolls famous sports media types by retweeting their crummy takes that have aged poorly. And the account is now up to about 600,000 followers. Should be a fun one. Without further ado, let's get started with Santana Moss. Santana, great to talk to you again. I'm pumped to have you on the pod.
Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I saw you last weekend up on stage at the draft. In case any of our listeners missed it, basically each team got to pick a former player or celebrity fan to read a pick. And you represented the Commanders. You read the 47th pick, which was Fedarian Mathis out of Alabama. It seems like you were having a good time. Like it was a pretty cool gig. Is that fair?
Yeah, I was, you know, I took advantage of the opportunity. I mean, anytime I get you get a chance to represent our team, I'm sure, you know, it's any one of us would have went out there and did the same thing. But, you know, I take a lot of pride in it, just knowing from the years of being here and so many aspirations I have for them going forward, man. I really appreciate getting the call to say that, hey, I wanted you to be the guy. And I went up there and tried to make sure I made everybody proud.
Well, you did. I have a couple follow-ups for you, though. One, last year, the team had former player Monty Coleman make the guest selection at the draft in Cleveland. This year, they had you do it in Vegas. Did you just get lucky? Did somebody owe you a favor? How did that go down?
I wish I could say that, but I didn't even take advantage of Vegas, man. Like, I've been to Vegas so many times. I went up there strictly on business, you know what I mean? Didn't even really care to do much else. And I remember coming in some nights being so exhausted. I was still on Eastern time the whole entire week, so I never really got a chance to really, you know, get on the good time schedule. So I was ready to go to sleep early every day because I was just so exhausted from the long day that I had.
Okay. Also, I've got to ask this question, and I'll follow up with why I'm especially curious about this. You did the 47th pick. The 42nd pick was read by Ed Marinaro, former Minnesota Viking. And in case anybody didn't see it, Ed launched into this whole story about when he was drafted, and it went so long, a woman from the production team had to come out on stage and tell him to just read the card. This whole thing was on TV. Were you backstage during all that, Santana?
I was backstage laughing, man. I mean, honestly, we were, I was talking with a bunch of the other guys who was there to do the same thing and didn't even know he was going on until someone pointed out. And I'm like, he's still on stage? And they was laughing and joking with me because they was like, Tana, don't do that. And I'm like, look, I don't have much to say, you know. I'm just going to do my job and get off the stage. The less I can, you know, I don't want to be up there too long. So the less is better for me. And it was funny, though, man, because when you just see everything, how I was interacting, how we was all interacting, and then everyone just kind of like stopped and was like, do you see what's going on? And I saw the lady come out. I was like, oh, he's tripping. But he had something to get off his chest, I guess, man, you know. So the man probably haven't been had opportunity to really speak on some of the things that he experienced. And that was his moment. That's how I looked at it.
Okay, fair enough. I was dying. Here's why. I was working Friday night for Fox 5 for the TV side of things. And I was at a draft party for Josh Pascal, who I don't know if you know him, but he's a local kid who was great on the D-line at Kentucky. He ended up going to Detroit with the 46th pick. But in the moment, I felt terrible for him because he's sitting there. Josh is an insanely nice guy. His whole family's insanely nice. He's sitting there watching the broadcast. he knows he's probably going to get the call any minute, right? It could be any pick, and he did go on just a few picks, but he's just sitting there, and it was kind of like head in his hands. Why does this guy, Ed, keep going on and on and on when Josh, poor guy, he's got all his friends and family there, and he's waiting to see where, you know, where he's moving, where he's going to be playing, where his whole life will be situated. He's way too nice to say anything, but I just couldn't imagine being in that moment that he's waited for his whole life. Then this guy just keeps talking and talking and talking.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't imagine it either. You know, I was a guy that when I had that opportunity to sit there and do that, that's one of the reasons why I didn't get all caught up into the whole party atmosphere and all that. Look, I want to hear my name called, and I don't want to have to worry about who's in my face asking questions, who wasn't a part of this whole journey. So therefore, I didn't have a lot of people around me. I had just the people that I grew up in the house with, you know, my immediate family, and that's it. You know what I mean? I want to make sure I was there. Like I said before, most times when it comes to things like that, I want to be able to say that I was selected before I can sit there and try to enjoy all the fun and everything, you know?
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And your experience is one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on today to talk about how crazy this offseason has been at the wide receiver position. At the draft, we found out that A.J. Brown is going to the Eagles, Marquise Brown to the Cardinals. Already this offseason, Tyreek Hill went to the Dolphins, Allen Robinson to the Rams, Devontae Adams is a Raider, Amari Cooper is headed to the Browns, Deebo Samuel wants out of San Francisco. It seems to me you got this interesting mix of teams that on the one hand welcome the opportunity to pay these established guys big money, but then you've also got other teams who are saying, no, we're good. Let me trade A.J. Brown instead of paying $25 million a year, and we'll draft a cost-controlled rookie in Treylon Burks out of Arkansas and said, as somebody who's been a very in-demand wide receiver yourself, what do you think about all this movement? What's your take on this?
I mean, it's kind of looking like a little, you know, basketball-ish. You know what I mean? Like, you know, now these guys are – it's kind of been trending in that direction the last, you can say, 3 or 4 years, though. You know, money is starting to be a little more guaranteed now. The salaries are enormous. I mean, it's ridiculous, you know, at times just hearing some of the numbers. And it's just now you're seeing guys that if I want to play with this guy and I played with him in college, then I'm going to find my way on his team. We didn't have that in my era. My era was like, you better be lucky that this team wanted you. You better do enough to stay on this team. It wasn't no jumping ship. It was like, hey, we're going to stay here and try to win the championship. Now these kids, it almost looked like being in that college, you know, portal and stuff, you know, guys want to swap schools. So that's what we're seeing now. And it was very interesting sitting back watching this year, because now you know what the future will be like when it comes to guys with, you know, who has the ability to really jump ship and go elsewhere and play where they want it or play for a championship. You know, a lot of guys going to be trying to get themselves on these powerhouse team. You saw the Rams just build one right in front of your eyes. I mean, a few years ago, they tried to build one and got to the Super Bowl and then win. And then they come back and do it again and show that it works, that formula works. So it's going to be teams, it's going to be players that's going to say, hey, if I can get amongst these other guys that I know that they are a player or two away, then why not try to get over there? And I think that the league is pretty much wide open now for these guys to partake in that kind of movement.
Do you think that's a good thing? Do you miss the old days?
No, I mean, it's the evolution of the game. You know, things have changed. Money has changed. The TV deals have changed. The fan base has changed. You know, you get more younger crowds that want to see this type of stuff. You know, want to see high-powered offenses. You know, the defenses has changed. You know, you can't hit certain guys, so you want to see more touchdowns. You keep the quarterbacks upright. You don't want to see the quarterback missing any games because you want that guy. He's a fan favorite. You want that guy who's packing the seats to play the entire season, 17-game season. So the game has changed. Everything has evolved. And then you got to think about it, too, just with dealing with health issues and for health reasons, you know, you have to kind of, you know, simmer down with some of the stuff that we was allowing before in our game, because you was basically, you know, able to kill somebody, you know, and not literally, but some of the times those hits can practically do so, you know, and I guess someone got smart because you see the longevity of that player's life after football. And you kind of say, hey, you know what, maybe if we took care of him while he was playing and maybe we did some things differently, he can live a prosperous life after ball. So I'm glad that the change has happened. I'm glad that moving forward, we will see what we see the last few years on Sundays, Thursdays, and Monday nights. I mean, high-powered, high-flying football. I mean, you want to see the ball thrown around the field. You want to see big plays being made. You want to see these marquee guys getting off. And then you also, on the other side of the ball, you got these defenders now that's bigger, stronger, faster. And it's all good for the game, if you ask me.
How hard is it? I know this is something that you probably have more experience with than you would like. How hard is it for a wide receiver to go from one quarterback to another?
Oh, man. Yeah, I fit that description, period. You know what I mean? That's me. It's hard. But I tell you one thing. In the moment, you're not thinking about it. In the moment, you're like, okay, got a new guy throwing me the ball. All you want done is whatever you was doing or whatever you had going on well for you. And if it's not going well, that's when it become a problem. You know, I never once thought about changing quarterbacks. I've always just wanted to be the best I can be for every quarterback. But out the gate, you will see a difference in how things come, how things are being read, and how the offense is being run. Because if there's no confidence there, then we're not going to come to you with some of the plays that we did. Or if there's no confidence there, then that quarterback might not come to you, because half of the time, you know, some of the best quarterbacks that I play with, they're not necessarily throwing to the guy that's in the progression. They throw into the open man, and they're gonna read the defense accordingly and say, okay, backside, I got a guy who I trust, who I know is gonna come down with the ball. If I don't see things on the front side, I'm going to him because I know he might have one-on-one back there. And that's what I try to tell a lot of folks about this game. You know, I love speaking on this because I feel like it doesn't get enough attention. Guys see numbers, fancy numbers, fantasy, you name it. Everybody will put a number up and say, well, this guy is on this plateau because of his numbers. Yes, that's true. But just because that guy who you played in the same time doesn't have the exact or similar numbers doesn't mean he's on that guy level. Yes, that's not how you paint that picture. And I was a guy that I feel like always did more with less. You know, I wasn't fortunate to be on teams that had a high power passing attack. I think later in my career, we was throwing the ball a lot more on a regular than we did when I was, you know, early in my career when I was more of a starter. And it was good because now I had less, you know, mileage on me far as how many plays they was allowing me to play. But then again, that takes a lot of the balls that I could have probably had if I would have still been in that position. So, but I do love the game and where it's going. But yeah, it's definitely a task, you know, for any receiver that has to change quarterbacks, especially at the rate that I was changing minds.
I think it's incredible that you put up the numbers you did given your quarterback situation. I went back because I was just like, you know, prepping for this podcast, and I'm a Washington fan. I'm from here. I was like, well, I know Santana had a lot of quarterbacks while I was here. Let me go back and look. If I'm not mistaken, you had 10 starting quarterbacks during your 10 years in Washington. You don't have to answer this if you don't want.
Well, I played 14 years total. I had 15 in 14 years, but 10, it was 10 or 11 here.
Can you name the 10 starting quarterbacks that you had while in Washington? I wrote down the list.
Okay, well, let me start at the gate. I had Patrick Ramsey, Mark Brunell, Jason Campbell. I always get stuck here. I know the guy's name. I just can't always get stuck with his name. I'm going to go back to him. After him, it was McNabb. It was Rex Grossman. It's another guy named I'm going to get stuck with. It's two guys I always get stuck with. After them two guys, it was RG3, Kurt, and it was a few more guys, man.
I think it was just one more during your time in Washington.
I'm missing the name. Oh, it's three guys I'm going to miss names then. So, yeah, it's three guys that I know for a fact I'm missing.
You want them?
Yeah, give it to me. I know one of them is one of my favorites, too. He's an older guy. Damn, I don't know why I always have a brain freeze.
it's a lot of quarterbacks. Here are the three you missed in order. Todd Collins.
Yep.
John Beck.
Yeah, I know I was going to forget John Beck's name.
Neither of them started many games. They didn't start a ton of them. And then Colt McCoy was the last
Colt McCoy, yep. Those are three. So that's 10. Yeah, that's the 10 that I had here. And then I had another 4 or 5 in New York. So in 4 years.
That's insane.
Yeah. It is. And you know what? Like I said before, we in an era, you know, that people look at just the whopping numbers and be like, man, that guy was, you know, and like I see stuff all the time. People put up polls and, you know, they compare this guy and that guy. And I'm like, man, look, especially the guys I played with or the guys I came to league with. And I'd be like, I sit here and say, well, I may not have their numbers. And it's no indictment to me or to them. You know what I mean? They did their thing with what was given. But like, that's what I did. I did what I was allowed to do with what was given. And so that's why I say I walk around with pride, just knowing that I took advantage of the situation and still made a heck of a career out of it. And I have no shame in still going out there and doing what I did. I mean, at the end of the day, if that's the way my story was meant to be wrote, I was all for it, man. I got a chance to live it up.
Well, you still had an absolutely incredible year. I think all the more incredible when you realize everything that was going on behind the scenes. But what, yeah. 14 seasons? You were an all-pro? Don't sell yourself short, man.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. But, you know, it just like when I said before, once you're done playing, you get a chance to reflect and look back. You know, when I was playing, I never paid attention to a lot of this stuff. But when you get a chance to reflect and look back, especially now with social media, someone to put up a chart and throw some guys together and just feel like, okay, who's better out of these guys? And then someone was mentioning you or say, oh, then you know, you read stuff. I'm one of those guys. I've never really been big on what people say because, like I said before, I live it. So you could say what you want. If it's not good or if it's not positive, I normally block you or get it out of the way anyway because I'm a guy. I'm all about positive energy. But when I sit there and sometimes, like I got friends that they love trolls. So they go after people who may mention my name wrong. They'll send me stuff and be like, man, what they talking about? I'll be like, see, man, why you even brought that to my attention? Because I'm a guy that regardless of what it is, I like to look over it. You know what I'm saying? And so when I hear the hoopla about, oh, well, this guy was better because he had a Hall of Fame career. Well, that's how you want to grade it. But if you can just go back to film work and watch both guys work, you would say, well, damn, if he had his opportunities, maybe he had the same thing. You understand? So that's how
I think you're always going to be a legend in Washington just because of how you played against the Cowboys.
I mean, that's going to happen. And, you know, to be quite frankly, you know, I always wanted to make sure that I did enough for the people here or wherever I was at so they can always respect and appreciate my body of work. And if that's how far it's going, then cool. I get to walk these streets here knowing that I handled my business for the fans who deserve it the most.
So we're wrapping up here too, Santana. But last time I saw you, I don't know if you remember, we did a live interview on Fox 5 DC. This was at the big like fan event for the new Commander's name. Anyway, at the end of the interview, I said, hey, Santana, who's your pick for the Super Bowl? You said the Rams. You nailed it. So if you're up for it, I'm hoping that you could do just a little bit more prognosticating with me here today. I got two things I want to ask you about. You cool with this?
Yeah, let me have it.
All right, number one, stick with the wide receivers. Here are the current odds from DraftKings for who's going to lead the league in regular season receiving yards next season. I'll give you some options. Fan favorite, Cooper Kupp, or at least the favorite, Cooper Kupp, 7-1, followed by Justin Jefferson, 8-1. Travis Kelce, Jamar Chase, Devontae Adams round out the top five. All are at 12-1. You like any of those guys to lead the league in receiving yards? You feel free to go off the board too.
I mean, it's always going to be tough to probably, you know, follow up the season that Cooper Kupp had last year. But I like the offense alone. And if he has the quarterback, which he does, I give him a second run at it. I mean, like I said before, that offense I played in my last few years when I was a slot receiver here. And, man, the numbers that I was allowed to put up in the slot coming in on third down, you know, he's a guy that out there, he can play every position, the X, the slot, and the Z. I'm sure Sean is going to make sure that he has the ball in his hands. And he's special. When I say special, you know, it's one thing when you can just run routes and catch the ball, but he sees things the way a quarterback sees the field. So, you know, I love when I hear him break down defenses and say, why did he run a route? He's running a route literally off your defense, not off of just beating his guy. So that's what's special about him. And I think years to come, man, as long as they can keep that going, he should be a guy in the race every year.
I forgot that you were here for a couple of years with Coach McVay. Did it surprise you seeing him go from where he was in Washington with you at the time to being a Super Bowl winning coach, or was it something that you saw in him all along?
Yeah, I mean, that whole staff, you got to think. I had McVay, Cal, I had Matt LaFleur, I had Mike McDaniels. I had all those guys over here with me. And Mike probably be the only one that I'm surprised about that has the position that he's in right now. I'm not surprised, but I'm surprised. The reason why I would say that, because I saw his journey, and I saw the road he took to be where he's at. You know, it was just great to see him as a coordinator a year ago. I was just, like, surprised by it. I was in awe about that because he was my receiver coach later in my years. McVay started as my receiver coach too, but he was a assistant receiver coach, and he was 24 years old. And when he opened his mouth one time in our meeting room, I knew right then and there that this is the guy I need to be listening to, because it's something that he's just said that made everything that I was looking at on the board that much clearer. And I spoke out in class, and I was like, hey, no offense to you, Keenan, because Keenan McCardell was the receiver coach at the time. I had just played ball with Keenan some years prior to that, and I grew up a big fan of Keenan when he was in Jacksonville, being a Florida guy. I was like, Keenan, give me a minute. But Sean, say that again. Sean didn't want us over. He didn't want to speak over Keenan, but I'm like, nah, this is something that we don't know. You know, Keenan, you new to this offense. He knows this offense, and Sean gave his insight, and I'm like, Keenan, you know, I need that. I say, Sean, I don't care how old you are, what you feel like you got to do. This, on for us to know what we got going on, we need that insight. So please speak up. And I remember leaving that meeting that day, and he pulled me to the side. He's like, bro, you don't know what that meant to me. You know, that meant a lot. Because, you know, he's a younger guy, and a lot of these guys, whether they're great coaches or not, they still respect the guys who they basically grew up watching. And I was one of those guys. I'm a guy that when he was in college, I was playing. You know what I mean? So He literally was like, Tanner, that meant a lot. And you a guy that I, you know, he like, I watched you, and now I'm coaching you, and I see the same thing in you from watching you being a, you know, being a young understudy. So I knew he had what it took to be dominant as a coach. I didn't know it was going to happen this fast, but, you know, I'm happy for all those guys, Cal and all those guys. Mike Shanahan did a great job putting that core of guys together, and you see where all these guys are at now, being head coaches in this league.
One more for you, Santana. Great story, by the way. I really love that. Here are the current odds to win the Super Bowl next year. I know it's very, very early. A whole lot can change, but here are the odds. Bills are the favorites, plus 650, followed by the Bucks, 7-1, then the Packers, Chiefs, and Rams round out the top five. All of them are 10-1. You like any of those teams? You want to go with somebody else? Who you got?
How about the Commanders?
I hope you're right. You know, I'm every year I get excited and think they're going to do great. Unfortunately, I'm wrong more than I'm right. However, the strength of schedule, at least according to the quote unquote experts, the schedule looks pretty good this year. It's easier certainly than last year.
I say this, I'm always root for the Commanders first, but out of those names that you mentioned, I see the Rams making it closer than all those teams. And that's just how I feel. I mean, they basically bringing, and I know it's hard to bring everybody back and do what you did, but they got better this offseason, you know, and they still have some moves to be made. So defensively and offensively, I think they gotten better. So I see the Rams making more of a fuss for that trophy again. But, you know, it's any given team on any given Sunday, Thursday, or Monday. So at the end of the day, you know, who knows? Whoever has what it takes, they'll be hosting that trophy.
Commanders, by the way, 65-1.
I like them all.
65-1. Might have to put a little taste, a little something.
No pressure. I like
Santana, this has been great. I really enjoyed this. Anything you want to plug, tell people where they can find you, take it away, man. Anything you want.
I mean, you know me, same old same, man. You can catch me on a lot of the, you know, the Washington Commanders outlets and, you know, their app. And it's a lot of our stuff is being showed on NBC, so I hope it's not, you know, no indictment for me saying.
No, but, it's cool.
And, you know, social media-wise, just catch me at Instagram and Facebook, 8 to the 9.
Yeah, you're not a big Twitter guy, right? I know you have an account, but I looked, and you haven't been on there in a minute.
Yeah, the last thing I said, I think I said I was chilling. That was 2011.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. All right, I'm going to tag you on Instagram. Santana Moss, Washington great. Cowboy killer. Thanks again for coming on, man. This is great.
Thank you for having me, man. Take care.
Neil, pleasure to welcome you back, my man. I hope you have your derby outfit and mint julep ready to go.
Yeah, I got a big hat that I'm gonna wear, so should be good. Should be ready.
So one reason I wanted to have you on today, I don't follow horse racing closely, but I do really like betting the big events. This started for me in 2015. My brother Eric and I had been playing blackjack all day at this casino in Minnesota. It's called Canterbury Park. Anyway, he was like, oh, it's the Derby today. I like these three horses. So we bet it, and I'll be damned. Hit a trifecta. That year it was American Pharoah, Firing Line, and Dortmund. We won like $800 on a pretty chalky $50 bet. And I was hooked. How did you get into betting the ponies? Because you do a little bit of everything for the Post, but if I'm not mistaken, I believe horse racing is one of your specialties.
Yeah, so I grew up in Queens, New York. So I spent quite a bit of time at Belmont Park. And I actually found Andy Byers' work back in the early 90s. And it really resonated with me, especially it was at a time when I was also discovering Bill James and baseball analytics. And, you know, just his method of creating the speed figures really made a lot of sense, and also helped me, like you know, win some races. So, you know, I remember I was with my buddy, we were at Belmont Park, and you know, we weren't having a great day, and he said, you know, I like this horse. Horse name was Miner's Mark, and ended up winning 25-1 or something. And you know, it just takes that one win, and then you're you know, everything else is history after that. But
exactly.
Yeah, so I was so I really liked you know, looking at horses and trying to figure out the puzzle. I mean, you know, if you ever looked at a daily racing form or a program, I mean, it can be pretty intimidating to look at it, but it's, you know, it's a puzzle. And, you know, there's so many aspects of horse racing that you have to look at and, you know, weigh differently for every type of horse, every type of race. So, it just really appeals to me from a, like, you know, trying to unlock the puzzle and mental exercise.
Before we get into this weekend's race, I want to talk about some of the drama surrounding it and surrounding the sport. Last year, Medina Spirit, horse trained by the legendary Bob Baffert, he wins the race. Then the horse fails multiple drug tests. It's disqualified. Baffert, whose horses have a history of this, is suspended. I believe there's still litigation surrounding it. I think Baffert is challenging the suspension in federal court. But the fact remains, he won't be there this year. And Neil, stop me if this is too much here, but it seems like a little bit like, I don't know, like Michael Jordan or the LeBron of horse trainers just suddenly being knocked out for a couple of years during his prime. Is that right, or is that too much?
Well, I don't know if I would characterize him as Michael Jordan and LeBron James, because they're not cheaters. I mean, Bob Baffert.
True. Been, and I was not a good point. I was not trying to imply that. Just his stature in the sport is what I mean.
Well, his stature is one that, you know, he's won a lot of races, but, you know, we get a little peek behind the curtain as to how he's winning those races. I mean, he's had a lot of horses disqualify. He's had a lot of horses die on his watch. He's had, you know, as soon as Medina Spirit won the Derby, I was pretty certain that the horse was going to fail a drug test at some point soon after, because, you know, the Kentucky Derby especially lends itself to a very specific way of handicapping, and a large portion of that is the pedigree. You simply, you know, the horses are all trying a mile and a quarter at for the first time, and, you know, it takes a certain type of pedigree to carry that speed that distance, and Medina Spirit did not have it. And so I was very surprised that horse won, especially with the way that it won on the front the whole way. And so, yeah, I mean, he's look, he's not good for the sport, in my opinion. I think that it makes it very difficult to wager on a sport where a trainer who has the stable of horses that he does has cheated. I mean, there's really no other way to put it. So yeah, the fact that he's not a part of this Kentucky Derby, I think is great. And I think it also reflects in the morning line odds. I mean, you have two horses that are kind of co-favorites in Epicenter at 7-2 and Zandon at 3-1. And then you have Messier at 8-1. And then every other horse is like, you know, 20-1 or 30-1. And I think it's a pretty wide open field this year as a result.
It should also be mentioned, last year's mess had a huge impact on gamblers as well. Reason being, the win was ultimately taken away from Medina Spirit. However, all the tickets were settled way before then. So if you bet on Medina Spirit, you won. If you bet on Mandaloon, the horse that finished second that day but was later declared the winner, you lost. Right, Neil?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's another issue. It's that there's, you know, it's hard to commit money to a horse race if you don't think that it's gonna be run fairly. And you know, with horse racing in particular being a parimutuel pool, meaning we bet against each other, right? We're not betting against the house. The house takes a cut. So you know, if I have a pretty good read on the horse race, and you know, there's a horse that, you know, wins inconsistently or has never won before, and you know, instead of that horse being, you know, 20-1 is bet down to 3-1 and then it wins, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty around that, and it makes it very challenging. And like you said, to find out later that the horse that you bet on actually did win, but you know, the tickets were already settled and you get nothing is pretty disheartening.
Last weekend, you published two really helpful, thorough columns for the Post that our listeners may want to check out. The first was a beginner's guide to betting horse racing, and you get into parimutuel wagering and how odds can change in between when you make your bet and when the race actually starts. And then the second, published Sunday, was how to pick the winner of a horse race. I don't want to go super deep on either of these, but I do want to mention in that Sunday column, you put out a 6-item checklist that people can go through before placing a bet. I thought it was really good. Here are abbreviated versions of all 6. Identify the favorite. Is it deserving of a short price? Highlight the last win for each horse. What type of competition did it beat and by how much? Look for horses that consistently run better than their odds. What is the pace of the race going to be like, and what horses did it help or hurt? Which horses will be fast enough to win? And lastly, what should the odds be on those horses, and how does that compare to the odds being offered? Neil, could you pick just one of those 6 items and go a little deeper for us? Tell us why it's important.
Yeah, well, I think the last one, you know, what should the odds be on the horse? I mean, you can, it's not enough to narrow the horse down to, narrow the race down to a couple horses or to even decide, you know, this is the horse that I like. You have to figure out at what price you like it. And the only way to do that is to you know, kind of come up with how often do you think this horse will win this race? This race was run 100 times, you know, 1,000 times. Like, how many times do you think the horse that you chose is going to win the race? And then you have to compare that with the odds that are being offered. So if I think that I have, you know, a horse that is, you know, an absolute lock to win, let's say 50%, and I'm able to get 8-1 on that horse, that's a great value for me, right? I mean, that's a huge value. But if the horse is only paying, you know, like 1-5, meaning you get 20 cents for, you know, every dollar you bet, then that's a terrible wager for me. Even though I think the horse is going to win, even though I think that this is the best horse in the race, the value is not there. So I think that's, you know, that's the critical part. A lot of people will tell you, I like this horse in this race, you should bet this horse in this race. But there has to be an extra step of, I would only bet this horse up to 5-1. I wouldn't play this horse at 2-1 or worse. And, you know, and that's really the difference. Like, you see, like, a lot of the faces on TV, they're giving out horses because they want you to cash a ticket and feel good about yourself. But, you know, over time, those are going to, your bankroll is going to get eroded because you're betting these horses at odds that don't reflect their true chances of winning. And, you know, it goes back to like the horses that consistently run better than their odds. And, you know, you look for patterns off of that. Like, why did that horse, you know, that was 15-1 win? Well, maybe it was a new jockey. Maybe it was a different distance. Maybe it was a different surface. And, you know, if they're returning to those type of scenarios, like, this is a horse that, you know, is really good at, you know, on the dirt sprints, and, you know, his last 3 races were turf routes, but now he's coming back to a dirt sprint and he's 17-1, you know, maybe his chances of winning are a little bit better. So, you know, I'm not afraid to bet multiple horses to win in a race, if the odds are in my favor. You know, if I think that there's, you know, a couple contenders that are offering good odds, then, you know, I'll certainly bet on them all. I understand that one of those wagers will have to lose, right? Because you can only win, you know, only one horse can win. But, you know, if you're able to figure out what the chances are for that horse and how much you like it, that will go a long way, I think, to making a big change in your bankroll.
We're going to get to your picks here in a second for the race on Saturday. First, however, Neil, are you much of a Derby historian?
I've probably seen every Derby for the past, you know, 20, 25 years. Define historian, like, do I know what type of horses I've won, or could I tell you like who won in like 1997?
Well, here's why I bring it up. It's because I would like to play a little game with you, Neil, called Derby Winner or professional wrestler. This is very similar to when we did USFL player or sitting member of Congress a few weeks back.
I love it.
It was pretty hard. Neil, I'm going to give you a name. You tell me whether it is a horse that has won the Kentucky Derby. I believe that there are 147 previous winners. Or if you think the name is a professional wrestler. Are you into this? What do you think?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it. I don't really follow wrestling, but let's do it.
Okay. That was my next question. Here we go. I got five of them for you. Number one, Lucky Debonair. Is that a Derby winner or a professional wrestler?
Derby winner.
Ding, ding, ding. Right off the bat. Nailed it. That is a horse that won the Derby in 1965.
Okay. I was going to say like the 1960s too. All right, let's go.
All right. You nailed it. Off to a good start. Number two, Exterminator.
No, the horse was Exaggerator, so I'll say a wrestler.
No, I'm sorry, that is a horse that won the Derby in 1918, a horse named Exterminator. Wow. yeah. Number three, Disco Inferno.
That's a wrestler.
Nailed it. Yeah, that's a wrestler. Best known for his run in WCW from 95 to 2001. He did hold several belts there, including the tag team titles, which he won alongside Das Wunderkind, Alex Wright. I do remember watching this tag team back in the day. I'm sad to admit. Number four, Colt Cabana. Colt Cabana.
That'll be a horse.
I tried to trip you up there. That is a wrestler. Now his first name is Colt, right? It sounds like horse, but it's not. He's wrestled in a bunch of different places, including the WWE, and he was mentioned during CM Punk's famous pipe bomb promo, and actually later sued CM Punk as well. Okay, here's the last one. Number five, the name is Typhoon Two
Electric Boogaloo. I'll say that's a horse.
Nailed it. Going out with a winner here. I was trying to trip you up on this one too, because there was a wrestler named Typhoon who was a tag team partner of Earthquake. They together formed the tag team known as the Natural Disasters, you may remember. However, Typhoon 2, as in Typhoon II, Roman numerals, this is a horse that won the Derby in, we're going way back for this one, 1897.
Wow.
Yeah, 1897 Typhoon 2. Okay.
Typhoon 1 must be very proud.
I'm sure. And very nice job there. I lost track, but I think you got more than you missed. So good job. Neil, here we go. This is the main event, shall we say, to keep going with our wrestling theme for this Derby chat. I don't know why I went in that direction. I know you've got some bets for our listeners to consider ahead of the Derby. Take it away, man. What do you got?
The horse I've liked for quite a while is Messier. He's 8-1 on the morning line, the third choice. I think he got a really good draw at the number six post. I think he certainly has the speed. He's got triple digit buyer speed figure from the Daily Racing Form, and also triple digit Brisnet speed figure from Brisnet. He closed really well in his last race, especially the last eighth of a mile and 3/8 of a mile, which you typically want to see in Kentucky Derby winners, historically speaking. He's got the perfect running style, likes to run up front, doesn't need the lead, can be right back behind like that first flight of horses, stays in touch with the pack, and is able to stalk his way and make a late move. And he's probably the best bred horse in the field by quite a large margin. His sire, Empire Maker, is a son of a Kentucky Derby winner, Unbridled. A Bridal's grandsire is Mr. Prospector, whose progeny has accounted for almost half the Triple Crown winners since like 1990. And Mr. Prospector actually is on both sides of the pedigree, both top and bottom. He's also connected to Curlin, a two-time Horse of the Year winner, AP Indy, who was sired by Seattle Slough, a Triple Crown winner, not a wrestler. And also, you know, he's got a lot of that stamina from AP Indy as well. So I think that, you know, just from when you're looking at everything that you want in a horse to win, he's got everything. So if he gets a clean trip, as long as there's no mishaps, I think that he's a real good contender. I would be shocked if he got if he went off at 8-1. I think 4-1 or better is a great price for him. I don't think he'll be the favorite because we know that Mattress Mack is going to probably put a couple million dollars down to offset his furniture promotion as a hedge. So, you know, I think that that'll help keep the price from going too low. But yeah, I think if you can get Messier at 4-1 or better, I think it's a great value.
And you would bet him to win?
Yeah, I would bet him to win. I'd also have him in the front of any exotic. So Exacta, Trifecta, Superfectas. I think that I like him a lot more than I like Zandon, who's the favorite. I think Zandon's running style as a closer is not well suited for a field of 20 horses in the Kentucky Derby. I also do not think his pedigree is structured right for the Kentucky Derby. Epicenter's coming out of the three hole, so he's also got like that stalking style, but he's gonna have two horses to his left that are gonna have no choice but to get out front. He'll be out front too. There's gonna be like another two or three horses that are gonna be out front as well. I don't think Epicenter is gonna be able to run the race that he likes. Plus, he was born in January, and horses that are born in January do not fare well in the Kentucky Derby. They kind of, the thought process is they've kind of already hit their peak, and that's why Epicenter was able to do so well. But the horses that were bred in like February, March, and April are just coming into their peak. So that's why you see much more horses with those birth dates do well. So I'm okay tossing the top two right off the bat. And then, you know, I just don't think that there's going to be much else, for Messier to have to deal with. I think that, you know, as long as he gets in there, gets a clean break, gets a decent trip, doesn't run into any trouble. I think that he's a real good competitor.
That's crazy about the born in January thing. I didn't know anything about that. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of angles you can find for the Kentucky Derby, and I think that you kind of need to use all of them if you're looking at a 20-horse field, especially when none of these horses have run a mile and a quarter before. But we know that horses that go to the front early, especially when there's a lot of them, they all tend to fade towards the end. And the closers, the ones that are at the back of the pack to begin with, they run into too much traffic and they have to go too far wide to get around the herd. And it's, you know, it's very difficult for them to navigate their way back up. So it's really like that middle part of horses. You know, you have your front runners, then you have your stalkers, then you have what they call the pressers, and then you have the closers. And I think, you know, that stalker presser type of running style is what's going to be key on Saturday.
If you were going to throw Messier into an exotic, anything off the top of your head that you'd recommend?
Yeah, I mean, I like, obviously I like him to win. I think that you can use him in all three positions and, you know, use him as a key horse. I think Pioneer of Medina is another stalker coming out of the 11th, post position 11. I think that he also has the breeding and the stamina to get the distance. I like Tawny Port. Tawny Port is, you know, he'll be further outside. He'll be in post number 18, but I think he's been bred with a ton of speed. Showed real good closing in his last race for the last 3/8 of a mile. Covered it in about 37.2 seconds, which is anything under 38 seconds is considered really good coming into the Derby. And you know, I think that he'll also be another horse that, you know, he's going to be breaking wide, but he'll be able to get in his position and, you know, hopefully come away with another piece. And also Cyberknife, he'll be at a post position 16. Another horse that I think probably doesn't have the speed to win it, but is a well-bred horse that probably has the distance for sure. So those are the three horses that I'm looking at right now to kind of use with Messier to create, you know, some of the exotic wagers like Exacta and Trifecta and even the Superfecta.
I love it. And I will be tailing you actually Saturday. I'm really excited about Saturday. So one of my brother's birthdays is today, and myself and our other brother, we're taking him. We're doing golfing, just like a quick nine on an executive course, which is good for me. I don't even golf, but he golfs. So we're going, and then we're doing the casino, and it's going to be Derby followed by craps and probably some blackjack.
I love craps. Yeah.
Yeah, man. So if you do well with these picks, thank you in advance. Because I promise you, especially by that point in the day, I'll probably have too much money on this.
I was gonna say it's tough to keep your money at the craps table, but I do love it.
Yeah, it's a blast. I'm really excited. I haven't played in a while either. All right, very good. Well, Neil, this has been awesome as always. Where can listeners find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @NGreenberg, and of course read my stuff in the Washington Post. We're gonna have a ton of Derby content. Like you said, I've already looked at the field. I'll have a longer piece on Messier coming out, I think, later this week. And, you know, also all that Trifecta, Superfecta stuff we talked about will be in there. And I'll have a couple of long shots to consider. And if there's rain in the forecast, I'll have something on which horses are best suited to do well in the rain. So we'll see what the forecast is going to be like.
Love it. Awesome stuff as always. Neil Greenberg, staff writer for The Washington Post. Thanks for coming back on, making your second appearance on the Rambling and Gambling Pod. This was fun. Take it easy, man.
Thank you. You too.
Joining me now, Fred Siegel, the creator of the extremely popular Twitter feed, about 600,000 followers, Freezing Cold Takes. The handle is @OldTakesExposed. Fred, I got to tell you, man, it is so easy to spend like an hour scrolling through your stuff. Basically, you repost takes from famous sports media types or sports media outlets after they've been proven to be very, very wrong. Is that correct? Is that a fair summation?
Yeah, very good summation.
Give us just to make sure that people understand what we're talking about here. Give us like one quick example. We're going to do some of your favorites at the end of the interview, but give me like one example.
Okay, well, a good example for that's very current is Kendrick Perkins said that he was pretty adamant that the Lakers would, at the beginning of the year, he said, I think the Lakers could compete for 70 wins. I could have retweeted it the moment that they were ineligible to get 70 wins, or you just wait until like they didn't even make the playoffs. That's like even better.
Right. Right. No, I've really enjoyed looking through this feed here. So how did it all get started? Because correct me if I'm wrong, but you're an attorney in Florida, right? That's your day job?
It was. I don't do it anymore. Yeah, yeah. I was an attorney in Florida. I still could be an attorney, but I don't anymore. But I was one for like 8 years. But at the time I was, and I just used Twitter like everybody else. The only reason I made the feed was because I saw all these journalists patting themselves on the back, and they would say, just like I predicted this, it's like I predicted that. And I just would remember them saying something that they didn't get right. And I just figured I would be the one to post those while they posted the ones they got right. But I only did it for the purpose of, like, I guess you could say, like, trolling.
Uh-huh.
Not to become a huge website, not to become a huge Twitter account.
So how did
that was
you,
the original reason to do it.
Yeah. How did you become such a big Twitter account?
It was pretty quick. There were these local stations that caught on it from different cities. Once they talked about it, and this was like within the first week, once they talked about it, on their radio show, it would get, I would get like 200 more followers from like that city. Mm-hmm. So from the people who were listening on that show at the time. And then I guess when I had like 1,000 followers in January, there was a show in New York, a big show in New York, based out of New York, that mentioned it. And then someone from Sports Illustrated saw it and they wrote an article on it.
I'm sure that you've heard from some of the people who authored these bad takes that you go ahead and retweet. Has any, like, you know, semi-famous sports media type gotten ticked off about this?
Yeah, at the beginning, they used to get very mad. Some blocked me. I blocked by like 100 accounts. Some guys will block. There's a few guys who will block anybody who tags me, like under their tweet. They probably blocked at least 500 people due to them tagging me on the tweet. Yeah,
that's hysterical. That's hysterical.
There's
okay,
so a few people who like that.
Fred, you were nice enough to pull, I believe, 5 of your favorite freezing cold takes. Let's go through them, man. You got 5 of them for us. These are 5 of your favorites. I know they're so okay, many. Okay. It's hard to.
Well, the Sporting News made an article one time back in 2018, and they were talking with all these Major League Baseball scouts that said, Ohtani from the Angels was basically a high school hitter. He won't be able to adapt to big league pitching. They're pretty, and it was a big headline on Yahoo Sports.
Nice.
That said, Ohtani won't be able to catch up to high school hitting. I mean, to big league pitching. So,
and here he is. What did you retweet it when he won the MVP?
Yeah. Well, and it gets to be the point. It gets to be the point where, like, anytime he does anything good, I'll get a million notifications to that tweet. It's only so many times I could do it. Right? I'm not going to post it like 10 times in a year. So you gotta save your time. You gotta save, like, you gotta like ration.
All right, give me another one of these. What's another?
Okay, well,
good one?
Okay. When the Celtics traded for Kyrie in 2017, August of 2017, they traded Isaiah Thomas for Kyrie Irving, and right after that, Colin Cowherd wrote, "Early congrats to the Celtics for winning the 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022, and 2023 Eastern Conference Finals."
Yeah, that didn't work out, huh?
I don't think they won any. Now, they could still win in 2022. See, in that case, if they do win 2022, I'll post that. Congratulations. You nailed it.
All right, give me one more of these because I want to make sure we still have some time to talk about your book. Give me one more great example. Okay.
All right. So when the Patriots hired Bill Belichick in 2000. I mean, if we're going to talk about a book, I have about 100 of these, and probably about 50 in the book, 30 maybe. It says Ian O'Connor from the, I think he was at a Westchester paper in New York, but it got picked up by the New York Times. If the paper, the quote says, or the headline says, the Patriots will regret hiring Belichick. And it has a little huge article, and it was really scathing about it. He's not the only one who did that. A lot of people did that, but that's the most famous one.
And you're keeping them honest, man. Tell me about this book you got coming out.
Well, my book, it's my first book. It's Freezing Cold Takes NFL. It's about just NFL. I try to limit it to one sport and one league, but it's essentially a lot of stories. I did not want to make just a book that said, it just had like a list of like my favorite ones, like you're asking me to do now. I didn't want to have a book of just that.
Uh-huh.
Right. I wanted to have stories about them because a lot of the journalists complain. Now you talk about how the journalists complain about posting their old takes, but a lot of their complaints is that the context of which.
Mm-hmm.
So take Belichick, for example. Belichick had a losing record in Cleveland. He just left the Jets after one day. And when he talked to the media, he was very, how Belichick is.
Yeah.
So, and in their minds, the journalists, like all of them who said that Belichick would be a bad hire for the Patriots, like they were thinking about all that stuff. Like you got a guy who's leaving, he's leaving teams after one day. He's got a losing record 5 years at Cleveland as head coach. Like, why would you want him? They want people to know that instead of kid who's like 24 years old sees the headline, the Patriots will regret hiring Belichick, and it's like, oh, what an idiot. How would you not know that? You know, they want to see stuff like that. So I tell the story about all the stuff that went on. And within the stories, it's like a narrative. A lot of the chapters are like that.
I'm excited to check it out. The book comes out when August, but you can pre-order it now. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can pre-order it now. You go to my Twitter feed and look it up. And it's pinned. You can look at my pinned tweet. It's right there. Or you could just look up Freezing Cold Takes NFL on any major book things like Amazon or I guess whatever the other ones are. And it should be up there. So.
Well, listen, man, I'm just hoping that you don't dig up any of my old lousy takes because there are plenty of them.
Yeah, well, some of the journalists are very disingenuous. They'll write, I can't believe that this guy spent all the time to scroll through my feed and find my take as if I targeted them. And just was like, oh, I want to see what this guy has. And we'll scroll, like that would take forever. It comes up on the search term, you know, like they know that there's a search there. They don't actually believe that I scrolled through years worth of their takes to find a, but they do that. They'll say that anyway, just to try to make me look like a huge loser. If I'm already not one by doing this anyway.
You are not. Hey, listen, man, you've entertained me and will continue to do so. I'm really looking forward to seeing the book too. Fred Siegel, Twitter troll extraordinaire. You can find him at Old Takes Exposed on Twitter. You can also just look up Freezing Cold Takes. Make sure you check out the book too. Fred, really appreciate you coming on, man. This is great.
Thanks so much.
There it is, ladies and gents. Really enjoyed that one. That one was fun. We'll be back next Wednesday, as always. Penciled in to talk to Matthew Metcalf, who's the odds maker at Circa Sports. Should be a good one. I've been waiting to have him on for a while, so I'm glad it appears to be working out. You never know these things till they happen, but it looks like we are on for next week, and I'm very excited about that. Otherwise, thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing. IG at Rambling and Gambling. Email ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Everybody, have a great week.